This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 54 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. Today we visit with the Kinky Cast founders. Here's your host, Dorothy.
Thanks, Max. Today we're in the studio talking to Woody and the Beast of Kinky Cast. Hey, guys.
Hey, Dorothy. How are you?
I'm very well today. How are you?
We have some lovely eye candy in the studio.
We're guests here.
That's right. You have the day off today.
Woody, I don't know what to do on this side.
It's like we're dangling without a parachute or something here.
I know, but I am also distracted by our dazzling hostess.
Well, the view is pretty good from here, too.
Oh, she's a politician, too.
She is. She's working. She wants our job.
Well, okay. Go ahead. Take her job.
I am going to be hosting Kinky Cast today. If you're not familiar with Kinky Cast, it's a kinky podcast. It's episodic in nature, and it runs about 45 minutes. It's both educational and entertaining. How did you guys get into doing the podcast here? Where did you see the need for it?
I've been in the community about 20 years, and education has always been the pillar of what I'm about. I thought spreading the words from some of the really talented people that are around the world to an audience so that some of the newbies coming in. And, you know, even as a 20-year veteran, I have learned so much from our guests on the show that it's really astounding. Every time we do a show, I come up and say, wow, I learned something new. And so I want to, it's all about sharing life experiences.
I'm followed Woody here. This was his brainchild, and it's a brilliant one, I must say. I've been in education for my entire life in one form or fashion, but the Kinky Cast, it's such a great concept to share the wealth of information with all of the ever-expanding community out there. And Woody is quite right. We are meeting some great people, known celebrities, unknown celebrities, and people that have stories to tell, meaningful, important stories.
So you talked about how big Kinky Cast has gotten up into this point. How many listeners are you reaching across the world?
Weekly, we reach about 100,000 listeners.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible.
We're shown in 58 countries right now.
That's awesome. And how are these folks that are interested in listening to the Kinky Podcast, how are they getting to the podcast that you know of? How are they accessing it?
There's a number of paths. A lot of people listen to it on their phones, their smartphones. And you can either go to kinkycast.com and listen to it right from our homepage. There's on the right column, the current episodes are just right there. And you can just click on the play button under a paragraph description of each one. Or you can go to one of the subscription services such as SoundCloud and put the SoundCloud app on your phone. And then every week, whenever we publish, it will pop up with a message that says you have a new Kinky Cast. Also, we're on iTunes, and there's a number of follower services out there that also pick up the cast.
It's easy to find us. Easy. And we have a huge presence on everybody's favorite kinky website, FET, that will allow you to follow the Kinky Cast on there, and the new shows are noted when they come out.
Strangely enough, on FetLife, we're called Kinky Cast.
Kinky Cast.
Friend name, and send us a friend request. We love taking on new friends, and you can then follow a description of the shows right there on FetLife, and there's hot links to take you to the shows so you can listen to it right from FetLife. Also, friend us on Facebook.
We are everywhere, and we are ever reaching out to the not-so-vanilla world via Facebook.
There's really a crossover world. We call it the 50 Shades generation, and they're coming in through reading the book and soon to be seeing the movie. We've seen an impact in local dungeons across the country and even around the world to where there's a lot of new people looking to explore the lifestyle.
people looking to explore a lifestyle that may not be ready to make the full commitment and jumping in, but they're looking.
Sure. So this is a good resource for them. This really is kind of a resource that's for the people, by the people. So if people want to hear a little something that they're interested in, how can they get in touch with you to let you know what they would most like to hear on KinkyCast?
We have a questions link. Some people want to do it anonymously. They don't really want to be sharing email addresses and things like that. And so we have a thing called the Bashful tab at kinkycast.com. You click on it, and it's kind of one of those fill-in forms. You just kind of put in your question and hit send, and it doesn't have any linkage of your email address or anything like that. Of course, you're not going to get an answer back via email from us. You'll have to hear it on the cast. But they can shoot ideas for shows. They can actually post a question. Also, each of us have our name is listed at the what we call the masthead, which is at the bottom of the right column. All of our email addresses are there. So if you want to post a question to the Beast or myself or even you, Dorothy, it's just a matter of sending an email to one of us and say, I have a question, but I don't feel comfortable talking, you know, to just anybody, but I somebody's voice on the cast, and away it goes.
And one of our upcoming shows is the result of a comment directed to us. It's going to be a show on littles, and we have a mommy and a daughter in different relationships that are coming on board to talk, and that show originated through a listener's comment.
In addition to that, we had a listener comment that says, we really would like to know more about rope, and so we're bringing in Lee Harrington and the famous rope goddess Midori.
So, listeners, we go for the best. Those are two of the best names in the business of rope.
So if you're looking for information, this is really kind of an end-all to be-all. If you submit a question, you can almost guarantee we're going to track somebody down that's experienced and get some answers for you. This year has been a busy year for you guys. You have done quite a few episodes. Out of all the episodes that you've done, which episode would you say personally you learned the most from?
Well, Dorothy, the problem isn't giving a answer. It's giving a single answer or even a multiple answers. We've had some great guests throughout the year. We did Mr. Baku that does FetLife, and that was an experience for us in that we crashed our system for that one.
The server hung in for about an hour, and then it gave up when I got a call from the Boston Data Center. It said, you're jeopardizing our other customers. We're taking you down. Because John posted on his friend feed, where he has 17,000 friends, that he was on the KinkyCast, and they just jumped on it, and boy, it brought the KinkyCast to its knees.
But for me personally, it's probably when I made the trip to Chicago for the Leather Archives and Museum.
What amazing show that was.
And that was just a great show, talking to the guys up there at the archives and learning exactly how much history is being preserved. And there was so much that I learned that I didn't know was out there, even about my local area. That in the past. So it was just an amazing trip.
And then, you know, if you talk about people that have been on the cast, we have lifelong practitioners of the lifestyle, such as Nancy Ava Miller, such as Sybil Holliday. These people have been in it since they were in their teens or before, and now they're up in the years. And so they have 40 and even 50 years of experience in the lifestyle, and to hear them talk about their life journey, you know, I sit in awe of where they've been and how, because if you think back to what the lifestyle was like in the 1960s, it's like nothing like it is today.
Oh, Sybil's story was just amazing, and she was there for the 60s and the 70s.
And the 80s and the 90s.
And she's still going.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing.
And then we had some really touching shows, like when Slave Pat was on. There wasn't a dry eye in the studio. That what an amazing episode that was.
Yeah, well, that was another experience when we went to the Southeast Leather Fest and got a taste of this leather lifestyle, leather community, leather brotherhood. And that's where we met Pat and Sherry and Blue and so many great faces.
Master Cecil.
Yes, Master C. So, of course, we already knew Boy River.
Yes, we did.
And it was just an amazing trip, an amazing group of people, and it broadened my world.
Catherine Gross brought that whole thing together, Lady Catherine, and she's going to be by again here very shortly for the next installment of Self That Is This June.
Yes, and listeners, be listening for those promos, which are going to be coming soon. There's been some big changes going on there. So exciting stuff. But, yeah, we have spoke with some real pioneers. Dr. Grinchy out of Florida, Dr. Brom, Nancy. We've had some really, these are names that have really brought this community together. Oh, can't forget Janet Hardy.
The publishing queen of the Kinky Press, Greenery Press. Books, if you've read them, like SM 101 from Jay Wiseman, they all started off on Greenery Press. But we were just looking at the Midori book, a gorgeous printed book from the Greenery Press. What an amazing person she is.
Yes, and let's don't forget our ultimate power couple.
Oh, yes. Ernest Green and Nina Hartley. They changed, certainly, the printed and film business as we know it. Ernest is the editor-in-chief of Taboo Magazine. And Nina, of course, is from a porn star to a producer of really good quality.
She has taken porn to a new level for the female audience.
Erotic video.
Yeah, yeah. It's a female-centric.
And also training videos. She has a how to do a blowjob video that is just, more people need to watch that.
Yes, and my eyes roll. Yes, Ernest and Nina, such a personable group of people. And such an amazing couple, an amazing story. And that's what we really reached out for all year, I thought, was the stories of the people that we talked to. They all had such great stories, great personal stories.
Dealt into some of the legal aspects with lawyer Alan Sloan, talking about what's legal and what you can do and can't do in the lifestyle. We talked to NCSF's Susan Wright for her Consent Counts program.
Yes, we talked to several web people, too. We had the Reverend. The Reverend was just so funny. He's so alive.
Well, and that's dominantguide.com and the sister organization submissiveguide.com from Luna KM.
Yeah, and then we had Joey Bredder, who has the incredible resource of the munchfinder.com.
Find munches worldwide.
And these are people that are working tirelessly and diligently for our community and putting things together. And this just also talks about how much we've been around the world, around the United States, and around the world this year. Luna was in Kansas, and then the Reverend was in the Pacific Northwest. John was up in Canada. We've been down to Vegas.
Also in Canada was Sophie Delancey up at artofblowjob.com.
Yes, Sophie. Sarah Greenmore out in the Vegas desert. Then we had Cecil down in Florida and a couple others down in Florida.
Joshua and Raven Caldera up in
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. And they'll be back this spring.
They'll be back this spring. We are, our local listeners in Nashville are going to be having a really great time as they're coming to visit us here. We're helping bring them into town. We've just had a great year here.
We have talked about Polly with Shiva's Vessel. We've had two episodes, and then she's been back for a third episode on swinging. And she'll be back for another episode extending on Polly with what could possibly go wrong.
Okay, so you guys talk about reaching people all over the country via phone for podcasts. What happens when you go to them? What's your favorite event to attend every single year?
This year, we have several things. The past year, we got to Chicago, to Leather Museum Archives, got up to Daddy Dream Master, which was a hoot. That was an event of sorts.
A house party.
The house party where we actually visited one of his house parties out in the middle of the cornfield. And that was interesting. Yeah, in the cornfield. Literally, people have been known to get lost in the corn. But this year, we're headed for Self again. We're headed for Frolicon. We have several other events that we're eyeing and considering really closely going to. So it's hard to pick a favorite. They're all got a different taste and flavor to them.
For newer folks that are just now getting into the lifestyle or have been in the lifestyle for a couple of years but never attended an event before, what kind of things can they expect to see at events?
Every event has a different flavor. The Southeast Leather Fest is an event that is very leather-centric, a little more stately, but still very, very, very fun, and a bit of a family gathering as you have people coming together that have developed these relationships that transcend kink or that have really become a family connection for them.
And that's what I felt. It was my first time this last June, and I felt I was surrounded by family. There was some high protocol going on. There was some relaxed protocols going on. Everybody could do the kink they wanted to do it their own way. And what I enjoyed about it is there was no pressure. Everything just flowed very nicely. They had great vendors selling some really amazing stuff. Classes continuously. The famous boot black stand that I got worked over at.
Yes, yes, yes. A smile still comes to his face for that experience.
Yes, yes. So we look forward to going to as many events as we can within budget restraints.
We will be right back after this message with Woody and the Beast.
On the phone with us is Midori from San Francisco. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You have a big event coming up.
I sure do. I've been doing this for over a decade. It's called AIDS Life Cycle.
And what is that?
It's this amazing experience. It's a 7-day bicycle ride for 2,500 cyclists riding from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And there are 600 of us roadie volunteers. I'm one of the volunteer roadies. And what we do, we cycle, we pedal, we cry, it hurts, it's amazing, it's beautiful, it's fantastic. And do this to raise funds and awareness for critically needed HIV services and education.
And how can our listeners help with this?
See, the thing is, I'm fundraising too, and this year my fundraising has been really, really challenged, and I need your help. I'm sick of my friends getting sick. I am also sad from various long-term survivors dying from, quote, heart attack, quote, cancer, and it's all HIV related. I'm also frustrated with the ongoing lack of education. So here's what I would love to get help in. One, I'll be doing all my Twitters and social media, so cheer me on as I post photos from the road. That's one. And I'll be wearing silly bunny hats. And then two, donate to my AIDS Life Cycle fundraising, because they have 70 cents to the dollar is going to services. And there are people that are living longer and able to live a healthy life because of this. And there are people that are not serial converting or becoming positive, and are people are having smarter sex because of the programs that are funded by AIDS Life Cycle. So I hope all of you out there will help me out.
Okay, listeners, go to the KinkyCast homepage. Look for the button that says AIDS Life Cycle Donate Now. Push the button and it will take you right to the place where you need to drop a few bucks into a Midori's cup for AIDS awareness.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're talking to Woody and the Beast today, formerly hosts of KinkyCast, but today they are our esteemed guests, so that we can take some time to learn a little bit about them too.
Dorothy, you have the handcuff key. You're going to let us go at the end, right?
I'm not sure. There's a glint in her eye.
I made no promises.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. All right. So we did some talking about KinkyCast, the wonderful guests that you've had so far, the wonderful places that you've been, but we haven't really had a chance to touch on you guys individually. Tell me, Woody, how did you get started in the lifestyle to accrue as much experience that you have now?
Way back a long time ago, I had just moved to Europe. And when I lived in the U.S., and this was in the mid-90s, I had dial-up internet like most people. But when I moved to Europe, I had really fast, full-time internet. And I was just exploring. And this is before Google came on or anything like that. And we had things like the WWWW, World Wide Web Worm. WWW.
Oh, the four W's, yeah.
The four W's. Yeah. And then we had a thing called Alta Vista. And those were the search engines back then.
Oh, my God. It sounds like they chiseled things into stone.
They did. And they were remedial was being nice. And so I found this thing called bondage.com.
Dun, dun, dun.
To say my life changed at that point would be an understatement. I found things that resonated with who I was displayed pictorially and text and writings and fantasies and all that. And it just rolled out for me. And I went, that's me. And I said, I've got to find people in my area. And I was living in the south of the Netherlands. And sure enough, there were local people on there, and I started talking with them. My Dutch is lousy, and so I asked them if they could speak English with me, and so they did. And I met people, and I went to events, and they had these amazing sex shows that traveled through Europe that would take entire arenas. I went to a sports arena in Antwerp, Belgium. If you imagine this entire arena full of kinky people doing some of the most amazing things you'd ever imagine. They had stage demonstrations of floggings. They had hot wax dripping on people. They had just hot bodies up there doing all kinds of things wrapped around oil poured on them. And I'm going, oh, more. I got to have more of this. And so I met up with some people in the vendor booths and talked to them. I said, well, how do I get into this? Who do I talk to? They hooked me up with some people and I went to a party that was in a barn.
Out in a cornfield?
There's no cornfield, but it was a two-story barn with a hayloft and the whole thing out in the fields of Holland. Around the main floor of the barn were all these crosses and spanking benches and things, and it was just like fantasy land. One of the guys loaned me his pet that night, and I got to flog for the first time, and I was doing all kinds of things, and it was just so overwhelming. I stayed in the community there, but I learned that no matter how good English they spoke, when they went into kind of a spacey mode, they couldn't speak anything but Dutch. And at that point, I was really grasping for words and trying to stay up to speed. And so it got to be very difficult. I traveled a lot, and so I was going to Los Angeles on a regular basis. So I said, I better look up the community there. And that's where I met my mentor. She came up through a house in Boston, and she started as doormat and worked up to one of the head of the households. There was about 40 people involved in it. And she guided me through this whole process. And she said, you need to start at the bottom. You need to get humble. She says, there's too many internet doms out there. You need to actually do the work. And she made sure that I went to every class. Whenever I was in town, she says, there's a class tonight. There's two classes on Saturday, you know, all this stuff. And she says, I expect you at every one. And she often went with me. I remember going to a sounding class. Lady Cynthia was doing the class, and she looked at me in the front row, and she says, you come up here and help me. And she says, here, you know, go scrub up and put on the gloves and the whole things. And she says, okay, you're going to sound this person. Well, the first person I did was a woman, and so I sounded her and shoved the sound in the urethra and the whole thing. And she says, then she brought up a guy, and I got to do a guy. And I said, well, you know, I don't know about doing this. You know, I'm heterosexual. And she says, just pay attention. And so I'm sounding this guy. Hey, you know, it's all good. And so, you know, doing that, I took a bullwhip class. I took God knows how many flogging classes, and just one after another. I found play partners. I was loaned play partners by friends and get my skill set up. And then I was up in San Francisco when I met Uncle Abdul, who is the electric master of the world. He wrote the book Juice, and he took me under his wing and said, you know, come on, we're going to learn about this. And since I have an electronic background, you know, I understood all the physics behind it. And so he, you know, connected the dots into the kinky world. And he and I actually went out and did shows together for a while. So it's been a wild and woolly ride. I've had submissives, I've had slaves, I've had various relationships, and currently I'm in a poly relationship.
So did you have a similar start to getting into the lifestyle piece?
My story is nowhere near as glamorous or international as Woody's. Been kinky all my life. Never, in the early days, it just didn't click. There wasn't enough literature out there to know that I was not totally off the rails, because in the 80s, when I come of age, there was just no lit out there that was valid and real. It would be several years before some of the groundbreaking books like SM 101 and Screw the Roses and Gloria Braim's Different Loving and so forth would come out. So I had a lot of interesting drama in relationships. Nothing tragic, just a lot of failure to communicate. Then, through the back of a magazine, I answered one of the ads. And back then, the ads were posted in the back of a magazine. You would send off your letter with a self-addressed stamped envelope, and they would forward it to the advertiser, who you hoped was a real person. And sure enough, I heard back from this person about 3 to 6 months later. She was located hundreds of miles away, as we started this correspondence via snail mail, which was really interesting. One letter a week, if you were lucky. And fairly shortly, we managed to bridge the physical gap and connect. And through her, eventually, I was led to the community here in Tennessee. Relocated to Tennessee and jumped in with both feet. I took over the People Exchange and Power Group locally from Mistress K, transformed that into a Rose and Thorn Guild, opened a place base in Nashville, Nashville's first permanent continuous place base, and the ride has just not stopped since those days in the mid-90s. It's just been a whirlwind ever since. I'm in two wonderful poly relationships, play partners. I am a slut. I'm proud of that fact. So I play a lot. I do volunteer with the local community in various capacities. So it's been a great ride, and I hope to have many more decades on this journey.
And I find it really interesting because both of you are in poly relationships right now. I haven't been in the lifestyle for too long, about 10 years now, but I did try my hand at a poly relationship twice, and it just didn't work out for me. Poly's certainly not for everybody, but what kind of advice can you give to folks that are wanting to give it a try to make it successful for them?
All right. I will definitely say it's not for everybody. And honestly, in this world right now, I think poly is a male-dominated world. There's still a shortage of male doms compared to female subs. So I'll be quite honest. I may be fortunate in the fact that I am a more rare commodity than the female submissive, but I do deeply care for my partners. Been in relationships with most of them for 13, 14, 15 years. So these are long-term relationships. But it takes communication. It takes perseverance. It takes understanding. It takes a willingness to make adjustments to make it work. Poly can be great. It's finding people with similar wants and needs to what you can provide. One of my partners, she really says she does not want me full time. She likes her private time, her alone time. And my other partner, the time I spend with away gives her a chance to explore her hobbies and concentrate on family and so forth. So we just have a mix that's clicking right now.
I have three women in my life, and keeping it all in balance is a full-time job, making sure that everybody's needs are met, making sure that the communication is constantly flowing. And it is not a job for the timid. I have three submissives, and they have different degrees of submissiveness. And unlike the Beast, all three of my girls are brats. And managing that is interesting at times.
I am blessed that my girls are not bratty.
You don't know what you're missing out.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know. And my hat's off to Woody to managing three brats, even some of the time, let alone all the time.
I think I'm a brat magnet, I've been told. That seems to be the type of personality I click with, but it's just what it is. And, you know, I love the way each one of them brings something different to my life, and I want to also fulfill their lives to make sure that I bring a fullness to each of them, because it works in both directions.
So you spoke about having submissives and having slaves in the time that you were accruing some experience in the lifestyle. Now you found that poly relationships are the most successful dynamic for you. What kinds of mistakes did you make before getting into the poly lifestyle? How did you know that it was for you? And what kind of, I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to having relationship failures in the process of trying to figure out what dynamic would work best for them. So what kind of obstacles did you run into before you found something that was going to work for you?
Relationships are developed. You don't meet somebody that has a sign over their head that says, I'm a submissive looking for a poly relationship and I want this X, Y, and Z, because it just doesn't happen. Each one of the relationships that I'm in has developed over a period of time. Two of the longest ones are 6 and 7 years. Then there is a newer one that is only 6 months old. And so it's a matter of acceptance of each of them. When I brought in the newest one, I made sure that the other two knew what was going on. It is all about communication. It's all about honesty. Keeping everything above board, there are no secrets. There is no hidden agendas. If you go in to a relationship with a hidden hand, you will get it burned. I did say that I had a slave in the past. I often say I'll never do that again. It was not a good thing for me. I found myself having to think 24/7 and try to run the relationship, because even though my slave was a very successful independent businesswoman, as soon as she came home, she took her brain out of her head and set it on the counter. And I had to make all decisions from that point on. I was as tired as she was when I walked in the door, and I just don't feel like running somebody else's life. It's not who I am.
I think one of the critical things to making a poly and kinky relationship work is coming to grips with what you want and who you are. There's so much cultural pressure around us to conform to certain societal norms, and I'll say that with quotation marks and all sorts of things. Normal is a setting on the washing machine. It's not, nobody is truly perfectly normal. We all have our variations, and it's coming to grips with and accepting your variations and understanding that your wants and needs are valid and real and okay to have. That is the biggest one. For a long time, I was struggling with the fact that what I wanted did not fit what society said was proper and norm. And finally, I had to totally chuck that out and invent my own world that fit what I needed and fill it with people that had similar views to me.
I think it's important to address the fact that a lot of people that are newer in the lifestyle might see poly relationships as swinger relationships, and they're most certainly not. It's an entirely different relationship and an entirely different dynamic. I'm going to switch gears just for a moment and talk about something a little bit more fun. What is your favorite toy to use in the bedroom?
My partner.
That's a clever answer.
My mind.
Your mind. That's probably, for me, that's what I most like to use as well.
Then if the Hitachi's magic wand is available, then that is a good second place.
Yeah, well, and in your case, the Hitachi attached to Bender.
Well, yeah, I do have a very powerful, fun machine that I keep in the dungeon, and a lot of women like him.
He has to stay in the dungeon.
Wait, he has a name?
He cannot be on the street.
Yes, he has a name. His name is Bender.
Bender. Okay, well, when you unlock Bender, I'll take off your handcuffs. What do you have? I'm the host, so I make the rules.
Unlock Bender.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Is she wanting to take Bender away?
Bender's too heavy to be taken away.
He is a big, big, big person.
So do you guys, you travel the country, you go to all different events, you talk to people on the phone a lot every week, you publish a podcast. Do you, anybody ever recognize you by your voice? I know that you guys, appreciate a little bit of discretion, but has anybody ever called you out from the sound of your voice?
Heaven forbid, but no, not yet.
It's not that Beast has a distinctive voice at all.
Yeah, that's probably the most distinctive, I think, is the Beast voice. So you've never had anybody call you out for that?
No, I am waiting for the first generation to come along, but we'll just wait for a while.
So you guys have also, you said that you lived in a lot of different places. If you could choose one place to live for the rest of your life, where would you choose?
No reason to leave where I am. It's got a good combination of things. I might want to change the political climate a bit. But overall, it's got variety, it's small enough and big enough at the same time. So I don't have any real desire to move.
I'm in general agreement with the Beast on that. I could use a little bit of warm sand between my toes, and Maui comes to mind.
Maui, that sounds really nice. Would you bring Bender?
I don't know. I'll get back down there.
Having been around the block for a little while, what would you say that your biggest achievement so far has been in the lifestyle?
I would have to say for me, it's the sum of my community service and work, from starting a club to helping guide this community from the 20th century to the 21st century.
The Kinky Cast is kind of a culmination of my efforts for a lot of years. When I was out on the West Coast, I taught edge play classes, electrical, knife, different things for different of the kinky groups out there. And we used to have sampler events, which were kind of fun because you could go in and different kinksters would have areas that would allow a newbie to sample what electrical play feels like or what flogging feels like or what hot wax feels like. And I always enjoyed doing those types of events because it is another form of outreach. And so I'm very service oriented.
When you talk about outreach and service, being a service oriented individual, what kinds of charities does KinkyCast support? What kind of events and what's out there that mirrors the mission statement of KinkyCast?
NCSF is very important to us because we are all about participating in this lifestyle, staying legal, having people to support you if you're having problems. NCSF is that organization. They're kind of a center point of what goes on in the kinky lifestyle.
And we support a lot of smaller organizations and causes through our resource and making our listeners aware of them. We give Midori a platform recently to promote a very important HIV project that she's involved in out on the West Coast. And we do that for several people that if the cause is important, we will help them promote that cause because we are here for their stories and their adventures.
All right. And I think it's about time for us to take a break. So we'll be right back after this with Woody and the Beast.
Hi, this is Woody, producer of the Kinky Cast. I just want to thank all our listeners for all the great comments we've got back from you. You know, this costs money, and since our staff is all volunteer, and we do this as a labor of love since we're all members of the kinky community, one of the problems that we have is paying for bandwidth, server space, and even keeping our equipment up to speed. Our studio equipment is old, but it works, and we just need to keep it working. If you feel that you could donate a few bucks to keep us alive, that would be great. Everyone here and the listeners will appreciate the quality episodes that we can bring you every week. As we start the new calendar year, we have great stuff planned, and I want everybody to benefit from the educational aspects, the entertainment aspects, and the really important people that have something to say. So join us in the new year. Go to kinkycast.com and click on the donate button.
And we're back. Today we're talking to Woody and the Beast of kinkycast.com. They're kink-oriented podcasts, getting to know a little bit more about them. Usually they play host to a number of different guests that are both educational and entertaining for us to listen to. But today we're kind of switching roles, and this is Dorothy interviewing them. So I have a question for you about things that you've covered on KinkyCast. Is there anything out there that you haven't covered yet that you hope that you'll have an opportunity to tackle here in the coming year?
I'm hoping this year we do make it out to the Folsom Street Fair. We planned on making it last year, but we were just having funding issues getting out there because it's not only the travel, it is hotels, rental cars, and all that sort of stuff, just getting around an event that's so far away from home. When there's events around the Southeast, we can fairly easily drive them, but when it's clear across the country, it becomes prohibitive. But we look to really involve the West Coast a lot more in the coming year.
I just hope that we get to more events all over the country. Master and Slave Conference in D.C. would be great. Some of the more hedonist events would be interesting to share with our listeners. We really hope to be on the road a lot more this year, but that all depends on scheduling and invitations. So if you have an event you want us, please let us know, and let's see what we can work out to put you on our schedule and map for the year.
I haven't covered yet what you think that the most valuable resource for new folks would be. People coming into the lifestyle, educating themselves, much like you guys educated yourselves when you were newer folks in the lifestyle through mainly the internet. What kinds of resources would you recommend to new people that are getting into the lifestyle?
If there's a class being offered and it's in a drivable range from where you live, go do it. There are so many opportunities of really good teachers that are out there, and to bypass one just because it's a couple hour drive or something is unfortunate, because you will learn so much both from the community, the people that are attending the class, you'll learn from them, but to learn from a really skilled instructor that has been doing it for a while, that knows where the safeties, where the thrill is of what they're teaching.
I would add, talk to the, not the older people, but talk to the experienced people, the people with years in the community. Find out the history, the background of that community. I'm a big proponent of the knowing the history of your community. I'm a big proponent of history, and the concept is failure to know history is dooming yourself to repeat it. Take the stories from the past and use them to build a stronger future.
That's why listening to some of the people that have made their life journey, like Sybil Holliday's, the Dr. Grinchy's.
Daphne.
Oh, Daphne. What Daphne. An amazing story. Talk to somebody who went through the transsexual process and all the life's obstacles in that. Coming out, if you're gay, coming out, if you're a kinky person, to vanillas, how do you do that? Why do you do it? Should you do it? How do you come out to families? We have episodes on coming out. We have episodes on people that came out and got really tough reception. Listen to those sorts of things. Find people that are talking about the subject. Find your local LGBT organizations and get in tune with them. Even if you're a straight person, get in tune with the rest of the community so that you can be supportive, because they can be supportive of you. We talked about that on a recent episode, is what if you need help and nobody came?
You know, that's something that I would like to second the nomination on, so to speak. When you guys first interviewed me a couple months ago, you asked me a very similar question. And I also responded by saying that I think that it's very important that folks find their local communities and start to attend as many classes as are offered. Even if it's not something in particular that interests you, it's important that as a community, you have a shared respect for the other things that people are interested in. I know recently my community did a demonstration on gender identity, and it was one of the highest attended events that we had had all year. I don't think it's necessarily because we have so many people in our community that are in transition, more just people that want to learn, want to have a higher respect for things that other folks in the community are interested in. And I think that that only serves to enhance sort of the feeling of camaraderie that we all have being in the lifestyle. You spoke about coming out as a kinky person, and you live this lifestyle publicly, that both of you are in your poly relationships. At what point did you come out and say, this is who I am, and like it or not, this is the way I'm going to stay because it's the way I feel most comfortable?
Well, Dorothy, let me be clear. I am semi-public. There is a certain element of discretion. I think everybody needs to keep a certain element of discretion involved. Employers are not always so accepting of our interests. We just have to look around and to find, it doesn't take us long to find news stories of somebody that suffered employment discrimination based on lifestyle choices that do not affect their actual job description. So I am out to the vast majority of my world. My parents are still struggling with understanding where I am right now, but that's okay. They live their lives and I live mine. But I think you need to be as open and out as is possible in your situation. But there is a certain amount of discretion that I think you continue to need to use. Lee Harrington counseling some younger people about indiscretions and how to avoid them and what happened when they didn't heed the advice on the front end. So I think discretion is still required in this Facebook era. I think we're maybe too open about sharing every detail of her life, and every detail of her life is not meant for public consumption.
I agree with what the Beast said there. I am semi-public. Certainly the kinky community knows who I am and what I am. My family around me knows there's something afoot, but they don't know how deep it is. Some of my girls are completely out to their families. Others say that they have another family and draw the line right there, and there's no more details about it. So it's just a matter of what works for you and how out you need to be. Being that I am a self-employed person, I don't have a boss that will judge me about my lifestyle, but there are certainly outsiders that will judge me. There are people on the corner that think that their church is more powerful than mine and will make judgment against me for the company I keep. I think it's important to judge how much you can let yourself be out, because society in general, as open as it is getting in the 50 Shades generation that we're in, still there's a lot of people that will be judgmental. They may go see the movie, they may enjoy the movie, but they will still draw a line between them and us, sort of thing. And as such, I don't put a lot of my own photos out on FetLife. I don't put a lot of my own photos out on Facebook. And because it's permanent, if it's on the web, it is permanent. You delete it, it's not going to get completely deleted, because there are servers out there that will still have it. There are people that have downloaded your photos and keep them forever. And so my advice to some of the younger folks that put full nude pictures of themselves up there, those may greet you in a job interview one day, and you can't undo that.
I don't feel any more need to wear a shirt that I'm Kiki Polly than I would find it appropriate for somebody to be wearing a monogamous vanilla shirt. It's my lifestyle. It's my choice. It's my life. And postulating it to the world is not appropriate for me to do as any more than it is for a fundamentalist church to be trying to force convert me to their cause.
You know, there's many times when I go out with my girls to a movie or to dinner or something like that. And if somebody's paying a very close attention, they may notice that I'm holding different hands at different times through the night. Well, if they're paying a lot of attention, I don't know why they're paying attention to me. You know, I look like everyone else, and I act pretty much like everyone else. And I don't have overt sexual, what do they call it, PDA?
Public displays of affection is the word you're looking for.
That's the one. And so it's nobody's business, you know. The fact is that I hug a lot of my friends. I don't do anything different with my girls in public that I would do with a close friend. So in this kind of age of hugging, it's kind of whitewashed to the point where you can't really tell. I'm not going to hold up a sign that says I'm Polly with her and her and her.
And why should I?
I think one of the points that you brought up, Beast, was really interesting to me. Personally, I have had a member of my local community work in the same environment that I work in. I'm sure that he didn't see it as being inappropriate, but he wanted to talk at work about some of our community gatherings, some of our munches that we had. And I tried my best to be cordial about it and emailed him on FET. And I said, I know that you're very open at work, but I'm not. And I need you to respect that I have a private life that I don't want my coworkers to know about. And I kind of got on the flip side of the coin recently. Another member of the community who I find myself very, very, very close to, she showed up at my job. And I happened to sort of make a face at her and wave and acted like I was excited to see her. And she kind of just ducked down behind a nearby display. And when I finally got a chance to greet her, she was long gone. And I texted her after the engagement and I said, you know, it kind of hurt my feelings the way that you treated me. And she just reminded me that, you know, if you're not sure about the other person, even how they're going to feel about being approached at their place of work or anywhere public, then you just don't. And she said that she wasn't sure about how I would care to be approached or if I would like to be approached. So she tried to make herself scarce. And I kind of, after the fact, I really appreciated that. I think it's important to note that people are friending each other on Facebook. And at first, that was an idea that I was very uncomfortable with because of the fact that I feel like my life is private. And if I know you at events and things like that, I expect to continue to know you at events. I don't want you to see pictures of my kids. If I had kids, I don't want you to see pictures of my job, where I work, things like that. I just kind of want to keep it strictly business. I kind of got wrapped up, I guess, by peer pressure. I got wrapped up into friending one person. And then it was just an avalanche of younger people that friended me probably within 3 weeks' time. And I got to the point where I had to take them back off of my friends list because of the fact that I guess I felt like I was pressured into friending them in the first place. So what kinds of advice do you have for younger people that maybe see people? Because I know in this particular community, I've seen that it's been kind of something I guess people don't agree on. And the fact of the matter is we all need to agree on something because we just don't know if that person we see every Wednesday night in a munch would like to be approached at the grocery store and maybe have to explain to their family members how they know you or...
It definitely can be complicated in our community. Our community has such a wide age variation that you can be approached by somebody that does not fit the mold of your typical friend. Some people are willing to take the vague stories and some want to probe further. And I think that is always a problem. So I believe your advice of avoidance when possible is the best case. The younger people, they really fright me with the amount of skin and explicit sexuality that they're willing to show the world. Maybe I grew up in a generation where that this was more dangerous and the world's evolving, but I do not believe the world's evolved yet. We still have people losing jobs because of what happens on their Facebook accounts. And FET is no different than Facebook. It might not be as easily discoverable, but there is nobody vetting everybody that joins FET Life for sincerity or their intentions.
I will second what the Beast just said because I know that there are companies that do screenings for HR departments. And one of the things they will do is get on Facebook and they will pick apart your account and find out what links you have. And they will follow it as far as they can go and report back to the HR whether you're hireable or not, because you may have some perversion, and that word just scares me, that people are judging it. But I have seen people not get hired for positions because of something that came back from one of these scans. And if you've been around the kinky community for any length of time at all, you can find people that can share that story with you. They weren't hired here because of this problem. They were too public. They were too out. And so the balance of in versus out is extremely critical.
And in many cases, they won't know what the reason was that they didn't get the job or they didn't get the promotion. Careers are important. We got to pay for our toys. We got to pay for our travel. We got to pay the lot bill. So careers are important. And I really am concerned that the younger generation doesn't appreciate the risk that the social media world poses to their futures.
I think that that would make a really good idea for a cast, just because personally, when I was sort of friended by all those folks from the community on Facebook, obviously they were all younger people. And I think had I been an older, more experienced person, it would have been easier for me to come to them and say, it's just not appropriate. I would like to keep my private life private and not on my Facebook where I have aunts, uncles, mothers, fathers that are friends of mine on my Facebook. I think when you're a younger person and you're telling another younger person, it's not appropriate. I think that there's sort of a stigma attached to it that maybe you are lying, that you're cheating, that you're hiding something because the younger generation is so open. They're so willing to share that information. I have a friend of mine on Facebook that when he purchases things for his playroom, he'll literally take a picture of it and upload it on his Facebook page. And that's just not me. There are certainly a lot of talking points there when it comes to the difference between FET Life and Facebook and maybe what's appropriate for either one.
Recently, my wife and I traveled to North Carolina to the Leather Ball event. And when we were there, one of the people that we know from the cast, been on the cast, sent to her Facebook, her kinky Facebook account, that she was here seeing and used my wife's real name on that. And then, of course, that went out to, you know, all my wife's family. And I called up this person. I said, take it off, take it off. No, no, no. We need to get her a separate account that is kinky.
My partner, Kate Kinsey, has two accounts. Kate Kinsey's her kinky account, and she has a vanilla account also. And she struggles to keep them balanced and separate, but her rule of thumb is if she has a normal relationship with a person that is independent of kink, they can be on her vanilla Facebook. If her connection to them is only through the kink community, they do not get on her vanilla Facebook. And I'm just reminded, a recent news story in the nation, politician spoke at a event that was sponsored by the KKK 10 years ago and has recently come back to haunt him today. And that is in the very early days of social media, but that come back to haunt him.
The stuff never goes away.
It never goes away. It never goes away. He can always pop back up. I've heard of women that did porn for a brief period of time, and they tried to pursue a nursing career or a teaching career, and has come back to bite them several times. And these are relatively young. These are under 30s. That their careers they spent time, money, and energy training for have had their doors closed because of prior indiscretions.
We use the phrase, because it's on the internet, it must be true, as a joke. But in fact, some things that are on the internet are true. So it's best just not to put that kind of stuff out there.
You just can't tell which one is which.
That's right. That's the dangerous part. So today we've been talking to Woody and Beast of Kinky Cast and KinkyCast.com, the entertaining and educational podcast for our kink community here. I just have one last question for you guys as we're wrapping up. We talked a lot about the 50 Shades generation today, the younger generation of people that we hope that are listening in to our kinky podcast. Will you go see 50 Shades of Grey when it comes out?
But I will definitely go see it because curiosity is killing the cat.
I think I'll probably wait for the DVD. There are other things that, honestly, I want to see on the big screen more than 50 Shades.
All right. Well, there you have it.
I'm going to 50 Shades to watch the audience.
Just to see who walks in the door.
And see what their reaction to, you know, when he unlocks the door to the dungeon, the red room. Oh, my God. And, you know, I want to see what, if people are going to gasp.
Well, now, if I was in the market for new partners, this might be a good trolling ground.
A shopping expedition.
Yeah, it would be a shopping expedition, but I've got a full slate right now.
So that's when you do wear the shirt that says, I'm kinky, talk to me.
Yeah, the full black leather, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The assless chaps, bring them out.
As somebody said, all chaps are assless.
All right, well, that was, and it comes out on Valentine's Day, too, so who knows, maybe some of the newer folks that happen to step in to see that movie will probably be bumbling around after midnight, so it has been such a pleasure talking to Woody and the Beast today.
Dorothy, thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, there was the invitation.
There it is.
Okay.
But we look forward to hearing Dorothy's episode that she
is going
to do.
Yes. I'm working on two episodes right now, so hopefully.
Yay. More of Dorothy to come.
Yes, indeed. You haven't heard the last of me yet.
You have been listening to episode 54 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. Next week, we bring you The Love Show. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week.